Today's show is brought to you by Castwave Studios Fundraiser. Go to www.indiegogo.com/castwavestudios and contribute today. We are the podcast refugee nation. Be a part of it. You can hear Boldly Going Nowhere on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
He's a man, he's a treasure trove. Tell me, what is your name?
I'm MC Rowe.
That's right. He can't be beat because he's so white from his head to his feet. But he will rap it when you give him a chance. Look at him move, doing a rapping dance. That's true. He's a dancing resident. He is the sidekick to the president. He's going way above. Tell me, what is your name?
MC Rowe.
That's true. He's crossing his arms. He's rapping and a chilling and a showing his charms. He will do it without fail. Get out his gun because he's shooting quail. This man will never stop. Look at him jumping up and down and ready to hop. He's got so much to prove. And tell me you never saw this man move. Doing the dance, the Caro dance. Doing the dance, the Caro dance. Dancing and talking and dancing and talking and dancing and talking and dancing and talking. Now it's time for a little shock with a Colin over there doing the old beatbox. You were such a helpful treasure trove. Tell me, what is your name?
MC Rowe.
Can see him later hanging in the cove. Tell me, what is your name?
MC Rowe.
Doing it right and he really strove. One more time, what's your name?
MC Rowe.
Give it up for MC Rowe in the house.
The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, we have an interview with two very funny men, Colin Mockery and Brad Sherwood from Whose Line Is It Anyway, who are on tour doing their two-man show. We also will talk about Yuri's Night, fever-induced hallucinations, and some urine. Classy. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakinis.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And I'm Brian Massey.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. Hello and welcome to episode 66 of Boldly Going Nowhere. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakinis.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And I'm Brian Massey.
And this is the show that's so popular you've never even heard of it. Although, perhaps after today it might be a little more popular because, boy, do we have a special gift for all of you listeners. An interview that we recorded just earlier today at the Weinberg Center for the Arts with two people you may have heard of if you are into funny things. Sketch and improv comedy, things that used to be on TV. We had an interview with Colin Mockery and Brad Sherwood from Whose Line Is It Anyway? And damn, were they nice.
Yeah, they were.
They were nice people.
Just a great interview, a great opportunity for us. We recorded it right there on the stage in the Weinberg Center. And we're gonna let you listen to that after you listen to all the other things that we want to talk about.
Actually, I have a question for you, Justin.
Please ask.
Okay. When we all got up on stage and we all started shaking hands with Brad and Colin, did anyone here see the movie Spies Like Us? Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd were pretending to be secret agents?
I think so, yeah.
It reminds me of the scene because we're all shaking hands, we're all crisscrossing. I'm like,
yeah.
It's like, doctor, 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 doctor.
It was pretty funny how we were crossing hands to shake before and after.
Like, wait for the shake. We
have a lot of stuff actually to talk about this episode because we still have not done our retrospective from Yuri's Night either.
That's true.
But
well, you want to go ahead and get that out of the way?
Well, sure. Let's talk about that real quick.
We can make it quick.
So last Saturday, so over a week ago, we went to Countdown to Yuri's Night. It's the Artisphere in Roslyn, Virginia. It was awesome. It also is a little inaccurately named because Yuri's Night was 2 days before on April 12th. And so we were counting down to something that had already happened. But nonetheless, it was an amazing event.
Oh, yes.
Let's see, where do we start? First of all, the Artisphere is normally an art gallery, and they had a number of interesting art exhibits. They had replaced the normal exhibits with submissions that, you know, fit the theme of space. And
I think my personal favorite is the chick holding the RPG while riding the bear, and the bear is drinking vodka.
Yeah, that one didn't really fit the theme, but it was awesome.
It had Yuri Gagarin in the background. It fit the theme.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah.
It was pretty sweet.
Yes.
There was a really cool kind of interactive exhibit. It was called, like, the Karma Wheel.
Oh, yeah.
Machine or something. And basically, it looks like kind of a giant vending machine with a bunch of flashing lights and a wheel, and it's got a bunch of panels going up and down it, and each one has a picture of an animal going from cockroach at the very bottom to human being at the top. And basically, this machine will tell you what animal you will be reincarnated as in your next life. So what you do is you first select what animal you think you were in your previous life and answer a couple questions. Things like, have you ever shoplifted? Have you ever cheated on a significant other? Have you ever denied food to the hungry? And then you turn the karma wheel to wherever you think your current karma level is, and then it will print out a little sticker that shows you what animal you'll be reincarnated in as the next. So, that actually has nothing to do with the actual event, but it was kind of neat. So, there were costumes. A lot of crazy costumes. What were some of your guys' favorite?
I'm going to go with Wedge Antilles.
Wedge was there. That was pretty sweet.
That was pretty awesome.
Space pigs. There were space pigs. They weren't my favorite. I'm just pointing out that they were there. I'm just listing off costumes.
Well, also, let's see. Yuri's mom was there. And
Yuri's mom.
That
yeah.
ended up actually being
the winner of the costume contest. Yeah.
And for those of you who weren't there, it was a person dressed in drag who was dressed as a Russian mother, like a very typical Russian mother from like the 1940s or 50s.
Yeah. Old lady with a cardigan, a bandana on, and carrying
like
a basket,
wearing
of fruit.
A babushka and all that, and
the babushka, babushka,
wearing a babushka, and like I forget what it was, but I think like the person doing this put a bowling ball in between their legs or something.
No,
on stage.
No, it was a head of cabbage.
The head of cabbage.
I thought I smelled cabbage.
Thought I smelled cabbage. Yeah.
I would say probably my favorite costume of the night. Like Wedge was cool and all, but my favorite costume of the night by far. Yips.
Yeah. Well, yips. Yuri's mother narrowly beat out the Yips. And the Yips.
In my opinion, the Yips should have won.
Yeah.
I was actually in costume too, but nobody cares about that.
No.
I do.
Well, Brian's costume was the same as the DJ.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome.
Which is probably the only reason why they didn't let you in the contest.
Yeah. His was much better. For those of you who don't know, I was the 10th Doctor. And he had, like, the full-on suit and the coat and everything. I just had, you know, kind of a suit that I had worn previously that day because I was at the Basilica for my sister's confirmation. So, whoop-de-doo. you know. And
Mazel Tov? No, that's not it. No,
that's not it. Catholic, you jackass.
I know, that's one. It's a joke.
But yeah, it was a fun night. I had a lot of fun. I drank way too much, and then I got on a moon bounce, and bad idea. Bad idea.
Yeah. There was a moon bounce.
I did that too, and after a few moments, I was like, I'm not really ready to.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Because I bought Sean a couple of shots, and I had a couple of shots myself, and then I mixed that with beer, and then I got on a moon bounce on top of that.
Plus, you had nothing to eat.
That is true. I had nothing to eat that entire day too.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, fuck, I am going to be. I'm done.
Oh, you fool. You proud fool.
You fool.
Yeah, we ate nothing but candy and moon pies while we were there.
And then we went to IHOP, and I devoured the fuck out of some food.
Oh my god.
That IHOP was like, it was the last supper. It was so
it's like, oh,
it was good. Delicious.
Yeah, I got
it
grapes.
It was so delicious.
Nutella grapes.
Yeah. How's that? How was that for you?
You got the, what was it, the Nutella grapes?
Fantastic.
I know, right? They were incredible.
Tastes good. Right. Okay, so there was a moon bounce that, and I was going to save that to the end, but.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
Spoiled the surprise yet again.
Mosquitoes.
Atomic Mosquitoes, a surf rock band, and Eastern Standard Time.
There's also photos of the Atomic Mosquitoes on our BGN Facebook page, which you can access through castwavestudios.com.
Yes, there are photos of many other things that we saw there as well, including all of the art exhibits.
Yes, all of the art exhibits. We got some photos of the burlesque show.
Yes, so
I will admit this. I was going through the photos once I got them from our photographer, and it's quite funny that 3/4 of the photographs taken were actually taken at the burlesque show.
Curious.
Not really.
Very curious.
If you knew the photographer, you'd understand why.
These are going into my private file, and click.
I mean, no, don't get me wrong. Some of them are actually really cool looking.
Yeah.
Should probably have background checks for our photographers.
The major difference for me between, like, going to a strip club and then seeing this was because, like, the burlesque, it was like an art form. It's like, there was art there, and there was very little in the way of, like, full frontal nudity, and they were actually performing. Whereas at a strip club, you pay to see, you know, tits and whatnot. And,
boobies.
Well, the difference between burlesque and stripping is that you put tassels on the nipples. Yeah, that's how you make it tasteful. Tassels.
Hello. You
see,
just
good alliteration there, tassels.
You just pointed at your boobies.
Pointed at your boobies.
I just pointed at my boobie.
So, that of course was the best part of the night was this stage show, which included a burlesque show, but that wasn't all of it. It was like a little play that these performers put on. The same people that we interviewed.
Yep.
Drinkbot.
Yep.
And
Kitty Glitter as
Captain Ball Crusher.
And Matt Grant as Number Two.
Yes.
I still have so many questions about Chaka Khan, but.
Yeah, it was episode 2, The Wrath of Chaka Khan.
Yes.
And.
Which has now led to episode 3, The Search for Drinkbot.
Yes. Yeah, we won't tell you how it ends, but.
No.
Drinkbot is somewhere out there
It's very obviously following the storyline of Star Trek trilogy.
Right.
So
that was a lot of fun. Very, very cheesy and over the top. And then they would have intermissions between each scene where a burlesque dancer would come out and show off her business. All of her goodies. Out on display.
Yeah.
For all of us nerds.
Yes.
Good.
That was great.
Tom.
And the people there were really nice.
Yes, I will say this much. Jared Davis, Kitty Glitter, Kate Taylor Davis, we want to thank you. That was by far and away the most fun we've had in an event this year.
Yeah. And they personally welcomed us and came up to us and shook our hands.
Yes.
Well, then again, it was also one of the first events that we've been to this year. I'm just telling you that the best is yet to come, sir. Because we do have an entire year.
We also gave one of our shirts. Our QR shirts, which will be available for sale soon, probably on castwavestudios.com. But anyway, we gave one of our QR shirts, which is a simple QR code in front. You can see the photos of them on the Facebook photos there from Yuri's night.
Yeah, I mean, it's a QR code.
It's an audio podcast.
Yeah, Brian's wearing one right now.
Brian is pointing to his QR code.
It's not a complicated concept. It's a QR code on a shirt.
Take a photo, go to the
end. It's pretty awesome.
It is cool.
It's awesome.
And, like, our future one is, it's gonna be, the castwavestudios.com, and it's gonna have the QR code, and under the QR code, it's gonna say, yes, we scan.
I like that.
I like that.
I really like that.
I like that idea, sir.
Yeah, and then we'll send one to, a shout out to Delilah and Nate.
Yeah.
All our listeners.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for watching me make a drunken fool of myself.
We were in it with you. Oh. We were totally in it with you.
Yeah.
I still kind of have a headache.
Can we explain that night real quick?
Sure. Well, I will just say that while I was not there, I can assure you that I was also being a drunken fool.
Yes.
Different place.
Good man.
The anger was shared equally.
Yeah, we shouted a drunk cast and we put it up on Ustream, and then some of the listeners were complaining about Ustream, so we tried to switch to twitch.tv or
no
just
idea what that is.
Justin.tv. Yes, it's actually called Justin.tv.
Yeah.
It has two aliases.
I don't like it.
And one of them's your name.
I don't like it at all.
I wouldn't like it. You have to have another program to actually hook in to make it work. You can't just go to the site and say, you know, click like most obvious websites out there, like Ustream, where you could just broadcast.
You think it'd make it easy, but no.
You have to like copy codes and, you know, and do equations and, it's not fun.
I have a PhD in math. It's like, fuck this.
And I'll be looking up tutorials and you're like, you want to put your GameCube or you, and like, no,
what do I look like, Doc Brown?
Would you like
Brown?
To stream you exactly. playing
finally,
video games?
Finally, Sean just got so fucking pissed off at it. He was just like, you know what? Fuck this. He had to walk off for a couple minutes and start playing Mario.
Yeah. I had, you know, some Mario calmed me down, and I was like, this is... And then I went for a walk, and then we brought booze back.
Yeah, so I got on Ustream, and I was like, everyone, look, I'm sorry. I know Ustream sucks, but...
You're going to have to deal.
At least it's not Twitch TV.
You're going to have to deal.
All right, well, Twitch TV, an abysmal failure.
I'll look into it because there's some high audio quality, but anyway, we can go back to what you were saying.
Well, Yuri's Night, I was just saying Twitch TV was an abysmal failure. Yuri's Night was an astounding success.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So let us move on. So I was sick with the fever last week.
Yes.
Just kind of a random fever that came out of nowhere. Kind of laid out for one day. And I have a time-honored tradition of watching, children or family movies when I am sick with a fever, because I don't like to just lay in bed. I have trouble sleeping, and so I want to watch something that's, you know, not too serious and kind of whimsical. And I was watching Rango, which was a great film.
Oh yeah.
But the first time I ever watched a movie while I had a fever, I was watching March of the Penguins. And I was so incredibly delirious from my fever that I started watching this film and looking at all these penguins marching across the tundra and living these really difficult lives and thinking to myself, God damn, would I like to eat one of those things? And not just a regular penguin, but
I thought you were crying?
An actual penguin.
Specifically a baby penguin.
Justin, were you crying? Were you crying for March of the Penguins?
No, I wanted to eat a baby penguin. I'm serious. I'm completely serious. I thought in my head that, like, when they're marching in line, I would just, like, pick up a baby penguin, and I would just be like, hey, little buddy, come here. I'm not.
What would Morgan Freeman think?
And in my delirious fever dream state, I imagine that a baby penguin would just be one solid mass, like gelatin. I would just kind of like take a bite out of its stomach and put it down, and it would continue walking.
What was your fever, by the way? Was it like 107? Because, I mean...
I think like 104.
Jesus.
Hey, Justin, do you want to see how Brundle fly eats?
Come here, get in the sandwich. Just get in the sandwich.
That explanation somehow is reminding me of Jeff Goldblum and the Fly. You want to see how Brundle fly eats? That's horrible.
So that started my whole obsession with penguins, and more specifically, my desire to eat one.
Did you want to eat one of the penguins from Happy Feet as well?
I've never seen Happy Feet, and I never will because it looks really shitty.
It's got Robin Williams.
I do love penguins, but not enough to see Happy Feet.
It was shitty. It was shitty.
My girlfriend at that time got me a chocolate penguin as a gift. In honor of that. And so, that was the first time. Second time, I watched a double feature of Kung Fu Panda and Monsters vs. Aliens. Kung Fu Panda, I actually really liked.
It is pretty... You haven't seen Kung Fu Panda before?
No, I still didn't have.
I still have yet to see that.
I'm saying I watched that when I had a fever.
Two's pretty good, too.
Monsters vs. Aliens was really shitty.
I heard Monsters vs. Aliens was really shitty.
So bad. So bad.
It was pretty horrible.
It was, you know, it was
pretty bad.
It was classic DreamWorks schlock. Like, the thing I hate about DreamWorks films, which is that they try to, like, make the humor for adults, too. You know, the same way that Pixar does it, but Pixar actually does it
Pixar
well.
Pixar, it actually works. Yeah.
But DreamWorks, it's kind of like the same thing with the, like, you know, Scary Movie, Epic Movie, like those kind of films. They're not actual jokes. They're just pop culture references. It's not a they're not parodying or joking. They're just referencing things.
Hey, this happened. See that? Laugh at it. Funny.
And
boy, didn't laugh, you shit.
I remember specifically the one line that made me absolutely hate Monsters versus Aliens, which is there's a monster attacking like the city, attacking a bridge, and they get all the monsters, load them into a truck, take them out to the bridge. And so the monsters are stepping out into daylight for the first time in, like, 40 years. And the, like fish creature, like the creature from the Black Lagoon, played by Will Arnett, he, like, steps out of the back of the van, and he's like, seems like the Earth has gotten warmer, has it? Does anyone think the globe has been getting warmer? Could anybody confirm that for me? Because that would be a real inconvenient truth, wouldn't it? And I'm like, okay.
Wow. That's not only stretching it, that's just bad. Inconvenient Truth couldn't save Al Gore, I'm very highly doubting it could save that movie.
Yeah, I don't even think I, like, quote it exactly enough to convey how bad a line it was. But
It sounds pretty bad just from the description.
It's pretty dumb.
Also, keep in mind that Will Arnett does write for South Park now, so yeah, that's disheartening to hear that.
Yeah, no, Will Arnett's a funny guy. It's not Will Arnett, it was the writing.
I know. I'm just saying.
How do we know Will Arnett didn't write that?
Because I just cannot. I refuse to accept that as a possibility.
Research. We need to do some research on that.
I reject that reality and substitute it with my own.
You know what movie, to pop in real fast, you know what movie I watch all the time when I'm feeling sick or I'm just down?
What's that?
The first Ninja Turtles movie.
Hmm.
That movie never fails to just bring me back up and just, like, give me back my energy.
I usually watch one of two films. Young Einstein or The First 20 Million is Always the Hardest.
Never even heard of that movie.
Which one?
The second.
Did you mean Young Frankenstein?
No, not Young Frankenstein. Young Einstein.
Young Einstein. Okay.
Baby Einstein? You watch the... I would be soothing.
Educational. It's educational.
It's got a lot of classical music.
He watches the educational stuff.
Yeah, no, you watch Baby Einstein. Anyways, so last week I was watching Rango.
The Yahoo series.
Can we get boo boo boo?
Anyway.
Who you calling?
No, they're very...
Who you boo boy? Oh, you boo boy?
Sean, shut up.
Okay, so Rango was a great film. Like, I thought it was far better than I even expected. Although, I guess I should have expected because apparently it won the Academy Award for Best Animated Film last year.
Yeah, this was not the same year that Toy Story 3 was nominated because...
Right.
If that was the case, then it would not have an Ice Cube's chance in hell.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's no Toy Story 3, but it was a good 2 hours of my life.
Yeah.
Minus the, like, burning fever part, but... it's got Johnny Depp playing a lizard... who's like dreams of being a thespian, but then he gets dumped in the middle of the desert and has to pretend to be a sheriff, in order to get by, and then saves the town's water supply. But it's got some really cool voice acting. My favorite specifically is Bill Nighy as Rattlesnake Jake. It just fantastic. Like, the menace in his voice was.
Also, I loved what they did with the Hunter S. Thompson reference.
Yeah,
that was funny as shit. Like, because it was just like he was just sitting in his car driving, and he's just like smoking the cigar. It's like, what the hell? What is that? You know, like bust ass to like Vegas, and it's. I'm so tired.
Yeah, I mean the thing about the movie bats. About
you can't stop her. There's a backcountry.
Goddamn bats.
The thing about Johnny Depp's performance was that he basically was just doing the Hunter S. Thompson voice for most of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. I mean, that's his go-to voice, I guess.
real fast, just to do a preview as well. Have you seen the new Tim Burton movie that he's going to be in? Yeah, he's playing a vampire. I'm like,
It's official. The Tim Burton and Johnny Depp are a nice couple, and they'll probably get married soon.
They're so movie gay for each other.
They're just completely gay for each other.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's kind of like, you know, welcome
definitely
to
definitely movie Land. Gay. Movie gay.
Congratulations, getting out of here.
Really? All yeah.
Right. Well, anyways, what I wanted to get to was not really to talk about the movie Ranko itself. It's what I was thinking about while watching it with a fever.
Oh yeah.
A fever.
Yes. And so I'm watching this movie and I'm looking at all the characters and there's all these different animals commingling in this town. Lizards and rats and rabbits and birds. And it...
Lions.
Jackalopes.
Tigers.
No.
Bears.
No.
Oh my.
Oh my.
That's the most dangerous creature of all, the oh my.
No. The most dangerous creature in the entire world, as we all know, is the honey badger.
Because honey badger don't give a shit.
Honey badger
no,
don't
give a shit. No, honey badger tears out your testicles.
I don't get
honey
this
badger
internet
don't care.
Reference.
Slap the shit out of it.
I don't understand this internet reference.
Well, look it up.
Not an internet reference.
I don't understand the reference.
I mean, it is an internet reference.
I don't understand.
No, watch Top Gear.
Or watch the honey badger video.
Which is on the internet.
Which is on YouTube.
Alright, back to what you were saying, Justin, was...
So... I have just, because I have a weird analytical brain. Whenever I watch an animated movie with, like, talking animals, I think about the fact that it's really weird that different species of animals are always portrayed as roughly being the same size. And it made me think of... So, Rango did it okay. Like, the bird and the snake, there's a hawk
yeah.
at the beginning that chases them. And, like, Rattlesnake Jake is, like, massive compared to all the other animals. And so is the hawk. So, like, that makes sense. Like,
I really like what they did with the rattlesnake.
Rattlesnake Jake was awesome.
Rattlesnake Jake. Great job in the animation with that.
Yeah, his rattler on the end of his tail was like a Gatling gun. And his size proportion was exactly right. I was like, yes, that is it right. But then some of the other animals, like a rabbit and a lizard, are not anywhere near the same size.
Depends on the rabbit and the lizard.
Like a lizard the size of Rango, who's like a little like chameleon.
It's not like a gecko isn't, but a Komodo dragon's about the same.
But
size.
If you put him in one sandwich, then it's just one sandwich.
Right. A chameleon's really small. A rabbit is much bigger.
Okay.
So. But the cultural work, the world where I think they did this the worst, is Redwall. Did you guys read the Redwall books as kids?
Yeah.
So.
No.
Okay, well, Redwall is a series of children's to young adult fantasy series where woodland creatures coexist and live kind of like in a medieval setting with castles, like swords, and they fight each other. Like all the good creatures are all like the squirrels, mice, rabbits, badgers. And then the evil creatures are like rats, weasels, stoats, things like that. And so the idea of a mouse fighting side by side with a badger always like really, really bothered me. Because a mouse is like freaking tiny. Like a mouse is maybe like an inch big. Mm-hmm. A badger is like 3 feet long, probably. So... In the book, the badger, obviously the badger towers over everyone. The badgers may, but they're saying like the badgers may be like, I don't know, a foot or two taller than a mouse. But like in real life, a badger is like 50 times the size of a mouse. Like think about that. That would be like you or I fighting side by side with like, I don't know.
Louis Anderson?
Oh, run!
I was going to say, like, I don't know, like a Sherman tank or something.
Okay.
Like, that's saying, like, if just you and you're standing next to a Sherman tank and fighting side by side as if you're a comparable size. It just boggles the imagination because, like, for a mouse to attack one badger could have easily wiped out the entire enemy army. Not even like a couple badgers, one badger. You know how fucking vicious a badger is?
Refer to previous in the podcast where we talked about honey badgers.
Yeah. And that's That's why I just couldn't.
I mean, if there's a bunch of them followed by mushroom, then it can be very, very deadly. Like, sort of like badger, mushroom.
Shut it down.
Shut that shit off.
Shut it down.
No.
I warned you.
Yeah.
England, soccer. Like, soccer.
One badger could have just destroyed everyone. And so that always really bothered me when I was reading the Redwall books.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Okay. That's cool.
Cool story, bro.
Like, seriously, how high were you on NyQuil when you started thinking about this?
A lot to vary.
Okay.
A lot to vary.
Just checking.
I'm just saying, I mean, I'm completely not high now, and it still bothers me.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, I actually have a story, and then I think we're going to go ahead and get into the Colin Mockery interview.
I think that would be a good idea. And then I have one as well.
Oh, okay, fine.
Well, mine's quick.
All right, cool. Well, I have a story revolving my new job, and there's a lot of piss in the story, so please, you know, if you don't want to hear about that, then feel free to skip. But so I had to take a piss test for my new job. And so I work as a chef at Eurist. It's, you know, kind of a catering company and whatnot. And they hand me these papers. And they say, here, here's your papers. You go ahead. You hand this to the nice lady. She gives you a cup to piss in. I was like, okay, fine. They don't give me any information besides, you know, oh, it's from it's a company called LabCorp. That's it. They didn't give me any information on, like, the phone number or the address, any of that. So I go home that day. I'm already exhausted. I'm like, fuck it. I'm not going to go look for this stuff, right? So I go in the next day, and I'm like, right when I hand her the papers, like, please write down the address. She's like, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable.
That's downright unacceptable.
I was like, what's unacceptable? The fact that I handed this paper back to you, or the fact that you didn't give me an address to go to? So she's like, here, I'll write it down for you. Sorry. And I was just get it done. So I was like, all right, fine. So the next day I go to this place and I find it okay and go in the door. Now, it's like this little room where you just sit and wait for, like, you know, 20 minutes or whatever before, you know, they come and get you to take it to the back. And this guy walks in and I shit you not, he looks like Dustin Diamond. He looks like Screech from Saved by the Bell, right? He has like the mustache and all that. And he comes in wearing this executive suit and he's got this big brown plastic bag. I'm like, oh, God.
Are you sure it wasn't Screech? Are you sure it wasn't
Dustin?
It
might have been. I honestly have no idea.
I mean, apparently, he's a real dick.
Yeah. Well, that actually plays into what I'm about to say. So he comes in with this brown paper bag, and he starts talking to the lady behind the window, and it suddenly turns into this huge argument, right? He's just arguing, and I overhear him saying, you took the test last time, why won't you take it this time, right? So I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? He whips out this big freaking, like, you know, Egg Foo Young container filled to the brim with piss. I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on here?
Wait, it was an Egg Foo Young container?
Yeah, it was like one of those Egg Foo Young containers.
Where you store your wonton soup or your hot and sour.
Yes.
Or your egg
drop. Oh, I think you meant like a carton, like one of those Chinese food cartons.
The plastic container.
The thing that you get for takeout.
You could have just had a Tupperware container.
And he's filled it with piss. And I'm like, oh my God, that is a lot of piss.
You're not supposed to fill the cup.
So I'm like, all right, fine. There must be something behind this. I'm still kind of eavesdropping because I can't really do anything else. And so he gets angry, right? And he's telling, like, I want you to take this piss. So
you will take my piss.
I guess he was pissed off.
So anyways, she goes. So here's the best part. She turns and goes over to the back, and he's still standing there. He turns around, and he gives me, like, the nastiest, meanest, fucking mean-spirited look anybody can give a person. He's just like, Not to do
it. I'm judging you.
But he's just like, he's just so fucking angry. I know it's a visual reference, but he's so fucking angry that I guess he had to turn around and take it out on the nearest person, and that person was me.
I mean, I know I just made that stupid joke like 2 seconds ago, but he's pissed about piss.
Yes. He was pissed about piss.
Oh, like he's mad about urine.
Yeah. So like she comes back and she's like, I'm sorry, sir, you can't do this. Your wife has to come and take the pregnancy test, you know, herself. I was like, that's what that was? Okay, fine. So he gets angry, slams his head on the thing, gets piss all over his nice suit and walks out. I'm like, you have got to be fucking kidding me.
He just soaked himself in his own piss.
It wasn't even his own piss.
No, it was his wife's piss.
It was his wife's piss.
And he soaked himself in it.
He soaks himself, and I'm like, he's going to work. He's going to smell like his wife's piss all day.
Question. Did he leave the piss container in?
He left it, and then he came back for it.
Oh, forgot my piss.
Forgot my piss. So, and then like, by the way, and then I had to take the test, right? Dude, they're so fucking angry about, they're so like, you know, anxious nowadays because like, they had me wait in the room and then they said, okay, fine, we've turned off the water supply and you can't flush the toilet either. I was like, oh shit, what? Okay. And they actually have a kind of temperature gauge there so that if anybody's listening, you can't, you know, trick them now by bringing in like your buddy's clean pee. You just can't do it. So, just get it clean if you have to go in there. Like, if you smoke and you need to take a test, you know, just wait a month and you'll be fine. But, fuck, it was a bit much.
So, Screech tried to give.
Screech tried to give some woman his wife's pee.
No, I mean, I would totally believe that was Dustin Diamond. Apparently, from what I've heard, the guy's a huge dick.
Oh, yeah.
Like, apparently he was on Jordan Jesse Go. Way back when there was still a college radio show, and they had him on, and they were trying to like ask him about his show or ask him about various things, and all he wanted to do was tell joke book jokes about disabled people, like wheelchair jokes and things like that.
Wow, Screech is a dick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a pleasant fellow.
Yeah.
Not cool.
Not cool, dude.
All right. I mean, at least he didn't reference the kids from Winnie High.
Yeah.
At least. God. Well, I don't know.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm gonna go ahead and make this quick, just because we want to get these people their interview.
Yes.
So on Yuri's night, while we were prepping questions for our actual review, a friend of mine actually and I just got involved in this conversation, and it's one of those conversations that once you start listening to it, you gotta go back and you gotta tell people about it, because quite frankly, it's just too good to pass up on. Okay. So here's how it starts. Right. It starts off with him. We're going to call him...
Jacoby?
We're going to call him Marty.
Marty.
Okay. Marty.
Okay.
All right. So Marty starts Facebook messaging me, and this is how it goes. Hello, sir. This is all in caps, by the way. For those who
don't know. Oh, this story. Ooh. This is really
I am nice. Bored and drinking. To which I responded, hello, Marty. I was like, no, really, how's it going? He's like, I am bored and drinking.
Good start.
He's like, okay, so what are you drinking? National Bohemian, because I value drunk over tasty today. So I got a good
nice
laugh
shout
out
to Matty Bo there.
Yeah, I got a good laugh out of that, right? Just, you know, I just thought, okay, he's just drunk messaging me. I'm like, that's cool. But then he's like, then a couple minutes later, he's like, okay, the caps lock has been scolded. It's now sulking in the corner. It's like, and then we start talking about Natty Bo. He's like, people give it crap, but it's basically alcoholic water that doesn't taste like battery acid. So that's a good thing. More than I can say for Bush or Natty Light. I was like, or Beast Light. And he's like, ugh. I was like, yeah, that's right. And then this is where things start getting a little weird. He says he has an epiphany. I'm like, really? What kind of epiphany? He's like, yeah.
A drunken epiphany.
I'm watching this video of a baby tiger. And I'm thinking, damn, I'd almost want to have kids if I thought they might be tigers. Then I realize it's not the tiger part that does it. It's the potential predator. Because my mind thinks kids are cool if they just want to grow up to kill shit. I wonder if that's some sort of instinct or if I'm just messed up. So then I said, so basically you just want to raise a cadre of mini amoral assassins. To which he said, in summary, yes. I would be much more willing to pump a bitch full of babies if I thought they were destined to be badasses. I'm like, okay, that's a fair point. It is. I was like, then just as a joke, it's like, you should have been born in Sparta. He's like, you see a shortcoming. I see opportunity. Let us rebuild Sparta. I'm like, at that point, I thought this was hilarious. I just typed in, like, best conversation ever. But he continues on. He's like, no, it's like, really, what I'm saying is, we could settle a civilization on an island and bring strong and sturdy human folk. And then we source them to nations around the world as athletes, soldiers, etc. And then create a tradition/religion of sharing your income with the home country. Call it pride or whatever. So the nation is supported by its primary export of badasses. I mean, hell, how many breeding bitches could three NFL player exports cover?
Where are you exporting them to?
I don't know. He's like, it's brilliant. And then I told him at this point I was using this conversation for the show.
Well, it's gold.
Like, yeah, so then he goes on to say, so the proletariat is athletic and the bourgeoisie are thinkers and you have it all covered. Even better, you just go all Ender's Game in the bitch and invent a sport where the all-around athletic excel and weed out the weak.
So, gladiators.
Sounds like, so basically you've just described the perfect capitalist state. To which he responds with a smiley face. And then he says, of course. Need more beer, comma, beer equals ideas. It's like, hell, if you consider the American defense budget, you could probably contract an entire army for hire. That would be the end game. But then that gets tricky, because if you're truly a mercenary organization and you're too good, it could destabilize world balance. So limits would have to be built in somewhere to prevent one wealthy nation from becoming too influential. You know, obvious solutions is to have black ops groups keeping the offending powers in check, guerrilla tactics, terrorism, etc. Wait. ... I think I just invented the U.S. defense complex. Fuck. And that's where the conversation ends.
Apparently, yeah. He realized the error of his ways. Well, I was also going to say, you might also have to worry about that island nation collapsing from all the sodomy.
Probably.
When they stop having children.
Well, he was drunk at the time, so I don't think the sodomy had entered his mind.
The sodomy part hadn't entered his mind. Luckily.
Well, sodomy never enters the mind, sir.
Oh my.
That's what you did there.
Oh my.
Oh my.
I mean, what I was going to say about having tigers for babies, I mean, really what it gets to, as you kind of hinted at, is the whole nature versus nurture thing. Because if your babies were actually tigers, but then you raised them to be pussies instead of tigers.
Who's your cookie? Who's your cookie?
Well, they are cats.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about how you raise them.
Cats are always assholes anyway.
They are pussy cats.
All right, well, this has been a really enlightening set of conversations, but I think we're going to go ahead and...
Is that what they call it nowadays? Enlightening?
Yeah. We're enlightening your load of brain cells.
He said load.
All right, well, enjoy this interview with Colin Mockery and Brad Sherwood. I know that we did. Until next time, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And I'm Brian Massey.
And we are boldly going nowhere.
Interview.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Boldly Going Nowhere. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Brian Massey.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And we are here on the stage of the Weinberg Cultural Arts Center here in Frederick. With us today, two very funny men, Mr. Colin Mockery and Brad Sherwood. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Have you guys been to Frederick before?
We haven't been here in 5 years.
Yeah, we were here in 2007.
All right, well, it's a bit of a rainy day, but I hope you find Frederick welcoming nonetheless.
Well, they have to be, because we're really funny.
Yeah, they have really no choice but to welcome us.
So you guys are here on tour doing your two-man show, which is aptly titled Two-Man Show.
Two-man group.
Two-man group, as opposed to Blue Man Group.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. It rhymed. Where did the concept for this show come from, and how long have you guys been on tour doing it?
Well, we've been on tour together doing our two-man show for 8 years.
It was basically Brad's idea. It started when we were doing Who's Line, Drew would take us out to Vegas to do a show. And it was, although it was a lot of fun, there was like 12 of us. So we didn't really get a lot of chances to get on stage, and both Brad and I are stage hogs, I guess. Yeah. And he had been touring with a friend of his for a little while and asked me if I'd like to give it a try. So it worked out, and we've been doing it.
We've never stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, great. Question about improv comedy in general. Do you think that there's still general mainstream interest in improv comedy, especially since Whose Line Is It Anyway?
I think Whose Line pretty much sort of brought it into the public consciousness. There wasn't, improv has been around for years.
Right.
Second City and people like Jonathan Winters, the Compass Players. But Whose Line sort of took it out to the mainstream, and because of that, a lot of schools started having improv clubs, because it's fairly easy to get people together and just make up crap. You don't really need a big theater. You can do it in coffee houses, restaurants, wherever. And I think there's still an appetite for it, seems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, now everyone knows about it. It used to be, unless you went to comedy clubs and in the big cities or in Chicago at Second City, you didn't really know about improv. And now all kids grow up knowing about it, and a lot of people in college end up in improv groups. So there's, you know, it really did put it on the map.
Yeah. I know one of the more well-known kind of hubs for sketch and improv comedy is the UCB in L.A., mm-hmm. Upright Citizens Brigade, for our listeners not in the know. Do you guys ever perform at the UCB?
I haven't. I live in Toronto, so I don't actually get to out to L.A. that much. We're both Second City people. Have you ever...
No, I haven't done UCB. But we both did theater sports, which is also all over North America. And so, yeah, UCB really wasn't around when we started.
Nothing was really around when we started. We were just talking that this wasn't a career when we were growing up. So thank you, Whose Line?
Well, I'm talking about how did you guys get started?
I saw a demonstration of theater sports, and that sort of piqued my interest. And being fairly lazy, I thought, no, this is a good way to just sort of, you just show up on stage, you don't have to learn anything. And found that I had fun doing it, and I was good at it, and it just sort of built from there.
Yeah, pretty much the same. I was in a couple different improv groups and then got involved with theater sports out in L.A. Kept doing that and then got involved with Second City and just had lots of outlets to perform. I was playing in clubs all over Los Angeles for free. You know, I'd do 4 or 5 shows a week.
Great.
Okay, ask the next question.
Sure. Now, since you both were involved with not only the UK version, but obviously the American version of Whose Line Is It Anyway, which did you find more entertaining, which did you find more fun to do?
There wasn't really a difference in the actual performing. I mean, it was basically the same group, except there weren't British improvisers, but it was the same production company, a lot of the same actors. The only thing that was different was the censorship, really.
Yeah.
In Britain, there wasn't any. And so,
we could say just about anything on British television, whereas the U.S. censors are a lot more strict.
Yeah, so there were that was a little bit of a change, because the first season, for every season, there was a censor in the control booth for every show, because there wasn't a script for them to look after. So the first season was tough, because they would actually stop scenes in the middle and say, you can't say that, make up something new, which would make Drew irate. And then for the next 20 minutes, we couldn't use anything, because he introduced every game using... words you can't say on television. So after that, they learned to save the battles for after the show. The producer and the censor would get together, and they would figure out then.
Yeah, and I mean, Whose Line definitely always walked a fine line of raunchy, but it was still like, it was on ABC. I mean, it's still like a family network. I mean, one of my favorite games that you guys always did was Things You Can Say About Your Blank That You Can't Say About Your Wife, and that always was like definitely treading the line, but it was also hilarious.
Yeah, it was always fun. It was hard for us because we didn't really know where the line was. There were some things that we're so adamant about. And then there were things like, you know, Brad, during one sketch, referenced a 200-pound snatch, which caused a lot of...
it was a weightlifting term.
Yes, it was. But it was during a game called If You Know What I Mean. So it obviously had a bit of us, and knowing Brad, it was totally a sexual connotation.
I think, if I can chime in for a second, I think my favorite joke that you did on that... particular thing was when it was things you can say to your dog but not your wife, and you said come.
Yeah,
that was it.
And that was when it got to the point where you would just go out and go, well, I don't know, let's just hope it can work. And I mean, our main thing was we wanted to get a show out there, so we couldn't be too raunchy. But during the fine line ones, we thought, well, if it's a fine line to us, maybe it'll be a fine line to them.
Well, plus they never actually told us or gave us a list of things that were taboo. So we wouldn't find out till we were saying it, and then they would stop tape.
Although, we just did a show in London by the same producers of Whose Line, and Brad and Greg and Wayne and a couple of other improvisers, and they actually did give us a list this time. But it was such, if you're playing an old person, you can't shake. If you're playing a prostitute, she has to be coquettish. And it was, I don't know.
Did they give you these in writing, like...
No, the producer would come up and sort of beaten and say, here's what you can't do. And, of course, you know, you can't say the regular stuff.
Right.
But I found the don't shake if you're an old person and playing coquettish hookers an interesting thing to focus on.
Well, I mean, for example, I was doing a make-a-song one time on Whose Line, and it was in the style of the B-52s, and I think the topic had something to do with insects, and I started rhyming, and I said something about bugs, and then I said, and all the bugs were doing drugs. You know, that rhymes with bugs. It's not promoting drug use, certainly among insects or anyone, but they stopped it because the reference to just actual generic drugs was considered acceptable.
Yeah, they stopped
not
us from
acceptable.
Doing drugs or Hitler.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to keep that in the public consciousness.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, you got to shut it down.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the make-a-song, it's actually a good segue to my next question. Where did they find Laura Hall? Because she, I grew up watching the show every week, and one of the things that impressed me the most was the fact that Laura Hall could play, like, any style of music just on cue and almost never made a mistake.
She was a Second City person. Yeah. She was in Second City, and her husband was in Second City, so we all knew her from those days, and when they were looking for a U.S. keyboard player, she came along, and she was perfect fit.
Yeah, the musical directors at Second City have been great. We did worked with one on Drew's Improvaganza, who I worked with for years at Second City, Bob Durkash. Amazing. They just have this, because I have no musical talent whatsoever, so for me to see someone at a piano improvising a song as they go along in whatever style is thrown to them, they truly are amazing.
Yeah. And always a really good sport, too.
Yeah, she was lovely. Well, she still is, I'm assuming.
Okay, sure. Next question is, who would say over your careers, present company excluded, has been the most fun to riff off of in live improv?
Well, besides us, no one really.
Well, we have, of course, both have always enjoyed playing with Ryan.
Yeah, I grew up with Ryan, so we had worked together for a lot of years before we did Whose Line. I always had fun. There's a guy in England called Jim Sweeney who was on the British version, a great improviser and a lot of fun to work with.
Steve Frost.
Steve Frost is an unusual improviser.
Yeah. He's like playing with a drunk rugby player.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. It's like he looks like he's always in the middle and ready for a fight, and he's 6'5" and weighs about 300 pounds, so whenever he got feisty, you just wanted to back away.
He was very energetic.
And I always got to do musical improv with Wayne, and it was always fun because we always do that so well together.
So that was a great part of the show.
The mousetrap game, who invented it and why, and the worst injury received on stage.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't invent the mousetrap game. It was a game that was in an old game list that I got when I was working in theater sports. They had out just, you know, hundreds of games in this list, and some of them were just completely ridiculous, and this was one of them, is to do a scene barefoot on mousetraps. And so I brought it to our Vegas show when we were playing with Wayne, Drew and the whole gang, and we tried it a couple times, and it worked, and then we decided to bring it into our two-man show, and it's just so popular with the audience that we've never stopped doing it, really.
And we've tried to.
Yeah. If they didn't like it so much, we would still not be doing it.
Yeah. Well, talk about commitment to the bit.
That's what we do. We're committed.
And as far as, I guess, the worst...
professionals.
Yeah, we've both had our feet cut a little bit from time to time. One time I was stepping on it, and the little arm mechanism, the trigger device, popped up, the little stake, and it stuck under my foot as I started to put my weight down. So it went about a quarter of an inch into my foot. It's kind of like stepping on a nail. But then I didn't keep going, so...
A couple of weeks ago, Brad whipped one at my head.
Yeah, so he's still got a little red spot from where I hit him in the forehead.
But I got a laugh, so really, what can you say?
That's all we care about.
Yeah, it's all in the Call of Duty.
Exactly.
So aside from improv comedy, what are some of the other roles or jobs that you guys have enjoyed doing over the course of your careers?
That's the only job I've enjoyed doing.
It really is the best of all our possible worlds. I mean, you know, it's fun doing television, movies, because they usually have more money, but here we have total control of what we're doing. We don't have to answer to network executives or censors. We're in control of our destiny. If we suck, it's because we suck. If we do well, it's because we're doing well. So, and we have a lot of fun doing it. We've been doing this for 8 years, and we've never had I've never had a day where I thought, oh, this is it. I can't do this anymore. It's always fun.
Yeah.
So who are some of your influences in doing improv?
There weren't really Jonathan Winters, when I was growing up, was the only person that I knew of that I watched and saw, this guy's just making this up as he goes along. Mm-hmm. Nichols and May were also great, but mostly it was like sketch comedy people, I guess.
Monty Python and SCTV and
Tim Conway and Harvey
Korman. Early days of Saturday Night Live, yeah, and the Carol Burnett Show.
So those were, that was kind of inspiration in a way.
Okay, so Colin, your son, I think, happens to perform on the website, that guy with the glasses. Do you give him pointers for his work on that show, or do you have an interest in that site and the things they do on it?
Oh, no, yeah, I love the site, and of course I watch all his stuff, but I've never, I would only give him pointers if he's ever asked, but he seems confident in what he's doing, and it's working well, so I certainly wouldn't give him any information that may go destroy his career. So he's doing fine, and so I've never, he's never, I think when he was starting, it was not asking for advice, but we were sort of brainstorming about what he wanted to do, and I think through there maybe gave him a few ideas, some he took, some he didn't, so he's doing fine, he doesn't need me.
Great.
He's far more creative than you.
Thank you.
I think every father would probably like to be able to say that.
Right? Yeah. No, it's good when they're better than you. It means you've done something right.
Awesome. So, Brad, I know you're also known for doing a number of impressions. Bob Dylan.
The irony is that I never did impressions before I was thrust into them on Whose Line.
Really?
Usually forced because they would say, can you do, you know, we'd start doing a musical style. And they'd say, how about B-52s? And I'd never done a B-52s. Impersonation of Fred Schneider before, but I just tried it and it sounded okay, and same with Dylan or Mick Jagger. So it was literally a bag of tricks that I hadn't practiced in any sense of the word other than just being thrown into it and giving it a try.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I think I used to try and do impressions of the Muppets, but aside from that,
hello.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. all right, well, we're getting ready to wrap up, but there's definitely one question I want to ask. You guys were invited to perform at the Radio and Television Correspondents event at the White House. Mm-hmm. How uncomfortable was it to rap about Karl Rove while he's dancing right next to you?
That was the luckiest break we could have possibly had. You know, it was, we were nervous to perform in front of all these muckety mucks live on C-SPAN, and I didn't really think he would get up to do the game in the first place. We were sitting at the dinner tables beforehand, and I just looked around, and at the table next to us, he happened to be sitting, and I thought, well, when we get up there and do the show, when we get to the part where we're going to do the rap, I'll ask him to come up, and he'll obviously say no. You know, I just assumed he would say no, and I saw that news anchor Wolf Blitzer was also sitting at his table, so he was going to be my fallback, and I assumed I would be dragging...
That would
have been
nice, too.
Yeah, I thought I'd be dragging him up, and I'd do a rap with Wolf. But he stood up and followed me to the stage, and then the rest was sort of internet sensation surreal history. It ended up in the top 25 weirdest political moments in Rolling Stone magazine.
Wow.
It was pretty odd. I mean, you know, as a Canadian, it meant nothing to me. But it was...
these clowns.
I was just sort of outside the entire thing going, this is so bizarre. Two guys who make up crap for a living are performing for the president. We have got this guy up here rapping.
Congressman, and yeah, it was weird that we ended up sort of going to the White House on our ability to be ridiculous and do fart jokes.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Yeah, the next day they invited us to the White House. We went into the Oval Office, and President Bush was there and gave us sort of a tour. We were there for 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, we were there.
And I kept
talking
thinking,
to the president for 20 minutes in the Oval Office, and it was really surreal.
So, Colin, you're saying this sort of thing doesn't happen in Canada all the time?
There was a show I was involved with called This Hour is 22 Minutes, which is sort of like the Daily Show, and I was one of the correspondents, and I would always go to Ottawa. But the difference was, you know, I'd be there with my camera guy, and he goes, oh, there's the Prime Minister, go say something to him. And I'd just walk over, and there was never anyone around, and I go, Prime Minister, do you want to sing a Christmas carol with me, or whatever. If I'd done that in the States, I'd be down on the ground with five guns at my head. Yeah. It's a totally different feel.
I wonder, do you think Karl Rove has secretly been harboring fantasies of being a rapper all this time?
I don't know, but he was a big fan of the show. We met him at a little cocktail thing beforehand, and he was raving about how much he and his son love Whose Line. So we already knew that he was a fan, but we certainly didn't think he was going to get up and...
Yeah, I don't think the rapping thing's going to take him anywhere.
Yeah, barely takes us anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Before we do, any quick tips on improv for us that we can take away from this?
I think the key to improv is when you're on stage, listening. Don't be inside your own head trying to think of clever things to say. Just listen to what's going on and react to that, because that's what makes the audience laugh, is seeing you synthesize what you and they have just heard and turning that into something, as opposed to watching someone completely disconnected from who they're with on stage and then trying to come up with jokes.
And I think the key is listening.
See what I mean? Yeah. Oh. See what I work with?
What?
See?
Yeah. Yeah, and just do it. My thing is, do it whenever and wherever you can, because that's where you find out what your strengths and weaknesses are. It's one of those things you can't learn reading a book. You have to, unfortunately, and sometimes, you only learn by being in front of a live audience who have paid money to see you.
It's truly trial and error, falling on your face as many times as you need to learn how not to fall on your face.
All right, well, I think it's going to be a packed house tonight, so knock 'em dead, guys.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for boldly going nowhere.
Our pleasure.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com.